I'm Epistory Richard, co-organiser of the London Indie RPG Meetup Group.
My name is Robert Cannell, and I am an RPG zine editor and non-award-winning game designer.
I don't understand how you can properly review a role-playing game. When you have a book, you have a consistent experience. You know, so the consumers of that book are going to read the words that the author has written on that page. And in a movie, you know, the audience are going to largely see what the director and the producers and the actors and so forth want them to see. But where you've got a tabletop role-playing game, you have such a huge variation in the experience that the consumers have, and it all depends upon the people who with whom you're gaming. So is there any way that you can actually properly review a role-playing game, properly critique it, or is it fundamentally every single reviewer's opinion is going to be, well, if you like this kind of game, then you'll like this game?
I'm inclined to say yes, of course you can. That role-playing games as a game design system, as a corpus, sits within a wider world of game design, which are subject to critiques from game theory, culture theory, from an examination of author's intent. And I think when you say that readers have a consistent experience, for example, of a book, I think you can push right back on that and say that's not true. That there's actually a split in literary criticism behind true readings of a book, which is the author's intent, and the reader's interpretation of the novel. I think there is something uniquely problematic in role-playing games, that the participants have a huge part to play, and I think the only other kind of art form that is comparable is maybe participative theatre.
Who are the people to whom, like, a review should be addressed? Can we possibly, given this kind of huge variation in experiences depending upon a GM, or an MC, or a narrator, or a storyteller, or whatever. Mm. Would a review or critique actually be useful to the players of a game? Or actually, is it a critique for the facilitator of the game? Is that really the proper audience for any kind of proper critique of a role-playing game?
I think there's at least two audiences for a proper critique. One is for the designers, the facilitators, the people who are developing the next wave of games, to provide them a framework in which to help understand what they're doing, what is working, what isn't working, ideas that can be revived from the past. And that is maybe a creative dialogue that the critique is helping in the same way that game feedback might help. But I think there is also a role for the audience who are participants. The existence of many, many indie games where it's very possible to just publish a game on the internet. The useful thing that criticism can do in that sense is promote interesting ideas to the widest possible audience. I think sometimes there's a concern that critique is always negative. I think it's better to think of it as trying to highlight the best and the most interesting, and trying to connect audiences to creative works that they might otherwise be unaware of.
That's a really good point. What I see is the fundamental challenge in any kind of RPG critique, and it's around audience taste. There is such a huge variation in individual players in the kind of games that they enjoy. I have to say that I wonder if it is possible to give any kind of score around it when that is going to be so individual to the reviewer's particular taste. You could come back. I know what you're going to say on this one, but I mean, there's a huge range of taste in role-playing games, but, you know, isn't the same true in movies? The same person who is going to like a romantic comedy film isn't necessarily going to like a war film. But those kind of descriptions of genre, or those categories of genre, are almost like the next, like a step beyond the more fundamental categories of game, where we have strong GM roles, or ones where we have kind of clear shared authority, ones where we have a lot of crunch versus ones which are more freeform. Isn't that a kind of like such a fundamental difference, such a fundamental part of not the genre that you're playing in, but even the way you interact with the game, that it means that the reviewer's conclusion is fundamentally going to be, if you like freeform games, then it's an 8 out of 10. And if you like crunchy games, then it's a 2 out of 10.
I think numeric schemes of quality are problematic regardless of games, right? So if you're going to ascribe a number to it, then obviously questions of scale and comparison creep in. And one thing that's interesting is over the history of games, it's like, how do you keep scoring consistent? Is today's 9 out of 10 the same as, you know, yesterday's 9 out of 10? All the flaws that apply to rating schemes would apply to games as well. And I would say we have to reject those things. Film's a good example, right? A newspaper might give X out of five stars or something. Broadly, those are really questions of consumer value.
So what does that mean, consumer
value? Well, so if it is 1 out of 5,
yeah,
the critic in that case is trying to say it is a waste of your time and money. Don't invest your time and money in this product. Now, what's interesting is the flip side isn't true, right? A 5 out of 5 rating, like a 5-star rating, the person reading the review is still going to subject it to their own personal circumstances. Imagine our gamer is equally likely to play a freeform game versus a more traditional structured simulation game. Then they're going to go, well, what is the better quality game, right, by whatever subjective criteria? What is going to give me the most value for money?
And for their time as well, because fundamentally, this is the primary outlay that most of us make in terms of certainly these kind of small press indie games where it's not so much about the cost of buying the particular book. It's more about the 4 hours of investment of the actually playing the game plus the 1 hour of travel in order to, like, either way, in order to actually get to the place and the organization of the people. So there is a purpose. You do see that there is a purpose in a critique and to highlight things that people may not have already heard of. Some of the reviews that I've gone out and looked at and read, they take a couple of different approaches. They either treat the game almost as artifact, as object, and they get very focused on the physical nature of the game. So they will go through the contents list, they will talk about each individual chapter, they'll often talk about pictures or the art in it.
The production values.
The production values, exactly. Mm. With each one of those, they will make some kind of comment to say, this feels quick, or this feels good, or this feels a bit clunky, or something like that. Mm. Is there a difference between critique and personal opinion?
I think one of those things about treating the RPG as an object and about production values comes back to that kind of value for money. You spent money on it, but it's a beautiful thing, right? It looks lovely in your house. Yes. And because that's easy to be objective about, you know, like one book is black and white, another book is colour, there's clear, sharp differentiations to be made. I think we're confused about the word review. I mean, I tend to use the word preview for something that simply tells me facts about something that I don't know. Not telling me anything in depth about the game. Having read a game is not the same as playing it. Yeah, but that information still has value if you're going to purchase something rather than play it. And I think we have to put that kind of contribution outside of critique.
I completely agree with what you say about it. It is the game more than the object. I mean, if you're looking there out to go out there and buy an object that's going to look pretty on your shelf, then by all means go for it. But if you're looking to buy a great game, then you want to know if it is a good game or not. Which leads us on to, like,
well, you've used a very loaded word there, right?
Good.
Which is a good.
Good. Yeah. Incredible loaded good.
You can come back at it from a utility value. You can say, is this game going to bring me pleasure? And that's how I'm going to find good.
So it's about, like, will you have a joyful or pleasurable experience in playing this particular game?
On top of that, I would also say, this is going to sound slightly masochistic, but there are games that I think are worth playing to experience the experience of play, even if it is not to your taste. So, for example, I'm not particularly a big LARP fan. I've tried it once or twice.
Right.
I find it very difficult to get into the right mindset. And so things like American freeform games or Nordic LARPs, which mix the tabletop and the live experience, I would not go to them as like my first choice. Or, you know, it's not going to be an entirely pleasurable experience playing them.
But that's about the category of game. That's about how you're interacting with the game, as opposed to whether or not it is a...
So I think you may want to say, well, what are the qualities of this game that makes it worth experiencing? Why should I go outside of my comfort zone? What am I going to get out of it? But I think when you're reviewing something, you should try and focus on the merits that it brings. And that is beyond the pleasurable experience you might have. You might say, this game did all these things as it said it would.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the experience that the author intended for me.
Mm.
And that experience is this, as best you can describe it. And I think that can be quite divorced from whether you actually enjoyed.
I think having a critique, which is talking about what are you, as a player or a facilitator, going to get out of it, that's a really interesting thought. So you talked about you would give a preview of a game, like based on the physical object or the PDF or something like that. Do you feel, in order to provide a critique of the game, that you need to have played it?
My personal view is absolutely.
You can't just read the book and use your own knowledge of game design and how people normally react to go, yeah, this game is gonna work all right. This is an interesting game for you to buy, and this is a game that's going to work around the table. Is it you actually need to put it into practice?
I think there might be the exceptional person who can read a written construct and construct that into an imaginative construct that is so exact that they can explore the game only in their imagination.
I'm assuming these are the kind of people who normally wear like black shades and trench coats and can create guns out of the air and do the bullet time thing. Yeah.
Well, whoever it is, it's not me. So I'm very prone to misreading rules and misunderstanding them. One thing that's quite interesting with Indian Stories games is that it is very much back to the original heyday of RPGs, which is very DIY, where you play something and you go, it didn't quite work, all we need to do is this. And I think reviewing something, you have to step back from that DIY ethos and say, this could happen, but this is what's here.
Okay, so let me ask you a different question. Mm. Do you have to have run the game to properly critique it? So, or can you get sufficient understanding of a game through just being a player around the table?
I think the interesting thing about that question is there's an assumption behind it that running or facilitating a game is a different experience from playing it. And I think in some games that's definitely true.
Very true, yeah.
Some games explicitly give the person who's facilitating a set of instructions which the players are unaware of. And I think in that situation it helps to have been on both sides of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think with the caveat that you're talking about the experience of the game, which is a collective one. I think that's the important thing. The role-playing experience, while experienced individually, is a collective experience. As long as you put boundaries on what you say of a game, I think it's okay to only have experienced one role. Mm. I think in some games, you definitely want to have been on both sides if you want to give a very comprehensive overview. And I think particularly if you want to discuss the game design aspect, I think you need to have experienced all roles in the game.
So this, I guess, it leaves me with one kind of burning question to ask of, you've already poo-pooed number systems, right? Okay, so what's left? How can we provide value? We can talk to people about what they might get out of a particular game. We can talk about how they're going to engage mechanically through the game to so that inform them as to their preferences. But fundamentally, and I'm going to use that word again, good, right? Is there any way to make an assessment of whether or not a game has value?
It really pains me to talk about this because to some extent, I don't want to.
Yeah.
You know, I want to be all airy-fairy and say that, oh, yeah, all games have value. They all have their intrinsic value.
Not all of them. Some of them have the value of a cautionary example.
I think even those things have, you know, if you have a love of the medium.
Yeah.
They have some value. I think what we're really talking about in critique is making comparisons, but I think you want to try and objectively say, this game either achieves its objectives or creates a genre experience or whatever the criteria are, better than this other game. And I think that ranking idea ultimately leads to the concept of a canon, the canon of good games.
Ah, okay. So you'd put,
which is very controversial.
So you say,
I think it's inevitable.
I think so too. I think people already have these ideas in their head. There isn't necessarily a huge amount of consistency among them, but I imagine if everybody sat down and said, okay, these are the games that you must play in order to have these kind of particular experiences, there would be quite a few games that would appear on that list.
Yeah. I think it's helpful to think of role-playing games in this wide universe of game design. And I think in terms of moving towards a better critique of role-playing, we should be looking at examples from outside. And of particular interest to me is the game design and theory of computer games, because we are in a very low-cost environment where if a game is bad, you know, we'll regret the 5-6 hours we spent on it and maybe up to £25 that we've spent on the material. In making a computer game, there's so much investment now, you know, like millions and millions of pounds, that really simple game design questions about how fast does your character walk? Do they physically pick up bullets, or do bullets magically teleport into your gun? You know, just very mundane interactions, like should you call an elevator or do elevators just automatically open their door, become very, very profound questions that have large monetary values attached to them.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of turbocharged their reflection and their idea of driving the state of the art of game design.
Drawing parallels from other kind of closely associated kind of disciplines is very interesting, because in computer games, I definitely have heard several advocates in computer games talk about the importance of board games and about how if you're looking out to design a computer game, start off by designing a board game or start off with a physical prototype before you even write any code of it, and then see if the fundamentally that game is enjoyable. See if you can simulate it with physical objects before you put anything into the code. And equally, I know that when it comes to RPGs, people are looking at board games as a better way of instructing people. So we look at, so RPG creators and designers are saying, we are past the heyday of the incredibly thick, overstuffed, three-volume kind of guide. Our target audience are getting older. They are more time poor. So we want a way of getting them kind of up the learning curve quicker. And there is nobody who does kind of getting people up the learning curve quicker than board games, where if you sit down with a board game and the rules are more than a folded sheet of A3, you know, like an A4 pamphlet.
Then you've bought a Fantasy Flight game. Playtesting is the thing that stands out for me from board gaming, which is not related to what we're discussing here. But the quality of designs before they even enter the, you know, the kind of pitch stage for production.
The quality of designs.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Be through that playtesting process, through that honing it of saying, what is this game? And kind of cutting it back and honing it, you know, this organized playtest groups, that whole support structure for design.
Yeah.
The forums for designers to compare notes and understand the mathematics of what they're trying to do. The final point I want to make is the idea, you're right to identify a period where we went, games are defined by the people who play them, and the rules have no real bearing, because ultimately if you play with good gamers you'll have a good game. And that is true, but I also think it's like a moral and intellectual retreat from what could be done with role-playing games. I think the idea that if you're going to have a good role-playing game, then you've got to go on this kind of quest to find the good gaming group, and that because there's nothing that can be done to like
nothing
move from
done
bad
to save bad games,
bad games to make them good. That's impossible, right? You should just quest for the fellowship of good games. I think that's a really weak argument, and I don't want to accept it.
Yeah, games can do better.
Games can and should do better. Yeah.